on today's BizNews briefing. President Ramaphosa doubles down on BEE. Starlink, however, gets an equity equivalent reprieve. Corné Mulder has a clutch moment in America. The United States tells the Afrikaner delegation what they want, and we relive that dropkick from 30 years ago. Stay tuned.
This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking.
It's Thursday, the 26th of June. I'm Stuart Lohmann. President Cyril Ramaphosa has staunchly defended BEE, saying it's essential for growth, not a barrier to it. Responding to questions from the National Council of Provinces, he rejected the idea that transformation and investment are at odds, calling redress a national project for all South Africans.
The statement of intent, which was signed to by various parties as part of the Government of National Unity, we are committed to translate the values of our constitution into focus, particularly with regard to the achievement of social justice, of redress and equity. That is what we all signed up for when we entered into the Government of National Unity. As I've said before, we must dispense with the false notion that we must make a choice between transformation and growth. Black economic empowerment is not only compatible with investment and growth, but is essential to the achievement of broad-based growth as well as prosperity. It must be seen as a process through which we take measures, direct measures to bring those who were excluded from economic activity into the economic mainstream. And to think that it will happen on its own when in the past measures were taken, including laws were passed to ensure that only a minority benefits, we would be deceiving ourselves. We must therefore be very clear and direct and make sure that this objective of achieving equality does happen. Because if we don't do so, it will not happen. So therefore, we need to take demonstrable steps to make sure that there is clear movement. And clear movement that will be seen and appreciated and owned by our people. However, despite the progress that has been made across a range of measures, we can do better. As with any other policy, we must constantly assess whether we are achieving our goals and whether we are making the improvements that we wanted. And various departments in our government, including the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition, are continuing to review the various measures that are in place to align these with priorities of our government and ensuring that we have industrialization, inclusive growth, and also ensuring that we facilitate access to finance for emerging black-owned and managed enterprises. This should be seen as a national project. It should never be seen as a project that belongs to just a few amongst us. All of us must be involved in this, including those who benefited under the previous system. They must be seen to be actively involved in advancing the interest of all, because failing to do so could lead to lack of growth in our economy. It could lead to reversals. So all hands, black and white, must be on deck to promote transformation in our country, to enable all South Africans to play a role in the economy of their country.
The Institute of Race Relations' Marius Ruert called Cyril Ramaphosa's BEE comments empty rhetoric, arguing that real black economic empowerment means economic growth for all South Africans, not failed redistribution policies. He was speaking on the Daily Fringe podcast.
I was just saying before the show, it's all about the balance of forces with the ANC. They often take two steps backwards and then one steps forward. So you think you've got them on the back foot, but they've actually, as you say, it's a tactical retreat. But sometimes when an army thinks making tactical retreat, then it allows the opponents to regroup and secure a beachhead or foothold in enemy territory, and then things can change pretty quickly from that. But I think overall, I mean, would the president have said something like this 2 or 3 years ago? I'm not so sure. But also, I think what's quite interesting here is that he doesn't talk about how the ANC is doing this or whatever. He says the government of national unity is committed to translate the values of the constitution into practice with a focus on the achievement of social justice, redress, and equity, which is all, I mean, just, you know, just empty rhetoric, really. It's not, you know, it doesn't mean anything. But, you know, if... We also, if we can actually change the definition of what black economic empowerment is, that would maybe also be a good idea. Maybe if we decide black economic empowerment is when you actually have actual reductions in the poverty rate and the unemployment rate, because in this country, the majority of people are black. So when something happens for South Africans, that's happening for black people, in generally speaking. So maybe we actually have to define, when we talk about black economic empowerment, we talk about South African economic empowerment. And when you are seeing economic growth of 5%, that is black economic empowerment, because black people are also going to benefit from economic growth. You can't have any actual redress anyway without a growing economy. You can't keep slicing up a pie that's staying the same size or actually shrinking if you look at per capita levels. You feel like you're insane. You know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing expecting a different outcome, because it's so obvious. The best way to improve people's lives is economic growth. You can't take from the haves and expect, as Abraham Lincoln said, you can't weaken the strong. You can't strengthen the weak by weakening the strong. And that's exactly what BE and various redress policies do. They simply don't work. But yeah, overall, maybe this is, I think then we just have to keep pushing. I think this is a result of pressure coming from civil society, including ourselves, and coming from overseas governments, and coming from private sector businesses. I think all this together has possibly led us to this point. And I think we have to seize this, the nettle while we can.
On a positive note, Cyril Ramaphosa did address Starlink's resistance to invest in South Africa, pointing to the equity equivalent model. This as a way for foreign firms to invest without giving up ownership, but with transformation still non-negotiable.
Starlink, as part of South Africa's international investment initiative, has the potential to deliver internet access overnight to even the most rural communities. Will the President commit to supporting investments of this nature without requiring businesses to hand over 30% of their companies?
Honourable Pienaar, you will be glad to know that as a country and a government that is committed to foster economic growth and transformation, we've come up with innovative ways in which we can involve all into the growth of our economy, whether they be offshore-based or the local-based. And for those offshore-based ones who have, for a variety of reasons, their own considerations about their equity, we have come up with a solution, an innovative solution, which I believe is very unique in the world. We came up with an equity equivalent measure that has enabled a number of offshore-based companies who have had great challenges and difficulties because of the ownership structures of their own businesses, which are often global. We've come up with the equity equivalent solution. And many have embarked on this, and they continue to do a whole number of, to embark on a whole number of initiatives that are equity equivalent. And they get involved in the transformation process of our country. And let me immediately say, we are not the only country in the world that requires that there should be local ownership. But we may well be the only outlier which requires equity equivalence, where we say, if you're not able to have joint ownership, we want equity equivalence. That will help to address the injustices of the past. And we gladly have found that a number of companies, in fact, all major companies that are invested in our country, have welcomed this and have embraced it and are actively participating in the process of transforming our country from an economic point of view, and have even committed to invest more money based on the structure of ownership that or equity participation that we have created. So we are not averse to coming up with good solutions so long as there is commitment to transformation. That to us is not negotiable, and we will not turn back from that.
At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
The Afrikaner delegation in Washington held a constructive, high-level meeting with senior White House officials. The trio outlined the key preconditions for rebuilding ties between the countries.
Today, the delegation had a very important meeting at the White House with senior staff. It was a very frank meeting in which very important issues were discussed and a very important statement was issued.
The White House demands that farm attacks and farm murders be classified priority crimes. They also demand that the ANC publicly distances itself from kill the farmer, kill the boer.
The White House also demanded that expropriation of any property only takes place subject to fair compensation being paid and only once all legal processes has been exhausted. The White House also demanded that American companies be exempted from all black economic empowerment legislation.
Staying with the delegation, Dr. Corne Mulder, responding to a hostile question during a panel discussion, said BEE punishes children born today for the past. He called for a future-focused South Africa that offers opportunities to all, not just a politically connected elite.
My name is Melvin Foote. I'm the head of the Constituency for Africa. I lobby on U.S.-Africa policy. We talk about AGOA, for instance. I'm one of the ones who was the architect of the original AGOA. And I can say that what I see here, I'm seeing you guys would be okay with apartheid as it was, but I'm seeing the new government of national unity, you got a real issue with it. You can't work with it, but you can work with apartheid. I'm asking myself, what, listening to this conversation, what are you telling your children? What are you telling with the young people? Are they think? Can they envision a new South Africa other than what you had or what you don't like? A South Africa where all South Africans, black, white, Indian, whatever, can get along and go forward. I don't hear it from this panel. I hear you're stuck in the past and you want to go back to the past. And I'm not hearing you talk about a new vision for South Africa.
I've got three grandchildren. The youngest was born a month ago. He's a white Afrikaner young boy. He will pay a price for the rest of his life because of the past. I don't think that's a good idea. Apartheid ended more than 30 years ago. He's going to pay a price for the rest of his life, being born a month ago. If we are serious that we want to create a South Africa that the ANC says belongs to all who live in it, black and white, then my grandson should also have a say in his own future one day. In terms of the policies of the current government, he will have no say. We are saying exactly the opposite of what you've heard, with all due respect. We want to create a South Africa that is a winning nation, a winning country for all South Africans, including the Afrikaner and other minorities. The people that are paying the biggest price at the moment are the vast amount of black South Africans who are unemployed. Why are they unemployed after 30 years? I've given you the figures. More than R1 trillion, $55 billion, have been circulated, according to Professor Gumede, between less than 100 people. And they call it black economic empowerment. That's not the case, not at all. We are absolutely committed to work towards the future. I'm not a European. I'm an African. I'm a white African. My family came to Africa in 1685. That's where I'm going to stay. That is the commitment we've got to our continent and to our country. We want to make a change. We want to make things better for everyone in South Africa. And that is the cry from all the South Africans. But we've got a small, tiny elite that are preventing that from happening. That is our challenge. I'm not interested in the past. If it was up to me, I would have not said one word about what happened in the past. I'm looking towards the future. That's what we want. And I want to create a future for my grandchild, but also for black South Africans and their young children. And the young generation is prepared to go forward. But the problem is we are being hamstruck by outdated ideological policies, by a political party that are stuck in the past, addressing each other as comrades. That's the problem.
Accounting firms are eyeing a return to the stock market, with private equity driving a wave of IPOs. The Financial Times' Stephen Foley says this could reshape the sector if it can avoid repeating the failures of the noughties.
The accounting sector is getting ready to dive back into the public market. Analysts are expecting a wave of initial public offerings from firms in the next few years. They tried this before in the 2000s, but, well, that experiment didn't go too well. And the sector is betting on this time being different. Here to explain why is the FT's Stephen Foley. Hey, Stephen.
Hi there.
So why are we expecting a wave of accounting firm IPOs?
Two words, private equity.
Hmm.
The accounting industry has been through quite a big change over the last 3 to 5 years. Private equity, which has not normally been associated with this sector, has been pouring in. And lots of firms have given up the traditional partnership model, where the equity in the firm is entirely owned by the senior accountants in the firm. In fact, more than half of the largest firms in the US now are actually owned by private equity firms. And at some point, private equity will want to sell out. So selling out to the public markets is likely to be one of the exit routes. And there's a second factor too, which is that some accounting firm leaders are looking at private equity and thinking, actually, I don't want to be owned by private equity. An alternative to the partnership model is a good idea. And they too are looking to the public markets. And that's what we've seen for the first time in the UK, with MHA going public just a few months ago.
Okay. So like I mentioned, the accounting sector has done this before. They've tried going public, but it ended up being a bit of a disaster. How come?
Yeah, the UK had three accounting firms listed about a decade and a half ago. They floated on the stock market and then proceeded to buy lots of smaller accounting firms and bolt them together. But one by one, these all turned into quite big debacles. They took on too much debt. They didn't grow as fast as they were hoping. The integration of all these smaller firms didn't work. And two of them actually ended up going into administration. So that kind of put paid to the public market experiment in accounting for a good decade.
So, Stephen, how is the arrival of PE making accounting firms reconsider this?
Actually, private equity have been imposing some financial disciplines, some efficiencies into the accounting firms that a number of people say will make them better suited for the public markets when they do finally get there. So that's one factor. The other two is I think public market investors are a little bit more familiar with professional services firms. One of the raps against investing in a professional services firm is the professionals, they can walk out the door at the end of the day, or they can take their clients with them. And that has always kind of put off investors. But, you know, private equity, which used to think that way too, has come around. And I think there is a sense that there is a value in the accounting firm brand, and that actually also equity can tie in those professionals as well. So there is a sense that you're buying something tangible too.
Stephen, say a bunch of accounting firms do go public. What does that ultimately mean for the industry?
Well, I think it'll turbocharge what we've been seeing already from the wave of private equity money coming in, which is this is becoming an intensely competitive and growth-oriented sector. There is a lot of desire to make investments in technology and to expand the service offerings that these accounting firms are offering to their clients. There's a lot more acquisitions being done as well. So this really could create a currency, actually. The shares can be used to buy new things and to incentivize more people to join these firms. So in many ways, it could be very good for growth and for the expansion of the sector. That's the theory, at least. But we'll be comparing to make sure that the same thing that happened a decade and a half ago doesn't happen again.
This week, 30 years ago, the Springboks defeated the All Blacks and lifted the Webb Ellis Cup for the first time. Let's take a look. There's a
dream. Welcome to Ellis Park with this quite dramatic moment. Incredible scenes.
Breakthrough Vienna. Use the Fundente to get
injury replacement. Back it comes to Strinsky.
There it is. Francois Vienna. Nelson Mandela is cheering along with the whole of the stadium.
As Chad Leclos's father says, that dropkick is unforgettable. The Springboks incoming tour kicks off this weekend with a match against the Barbarians. And that's it for today's show. A big thanks to the BizNews production team, from me, Stuart Lohman, until next week, where my colleague Bronwyn Nielsen will be back with us. Cheerio.
This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to finance solutions that enable real growth.